He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025. That's the phone number here. 615-737-1025. Get you in touch with us. Hang out with us. Talk a little bit about the Titans in just a little bit. Mayor Megan Berry going to join us 7:45. So not too far away. We'll talk to her about a bunch of the fantastic stuff going on in the city, as well as Monday Night Football. We'll get into that. But I do want, as we've had all this negative talk about the Vols, I want the beacon of light in me in a dark, dark world wants to find sort of a positive, because I think it's important right now to identify positives for a very specific reason. I believe that sooner than later, obviously at this point we can now start to look at it and see the Legos being stacked. The Vols are going to be hiring a new head coach. And if you're hiring a new head coach, you need some positives. What are the positives that are going to make other coaches say, "Ooh, I want to be the coach there"? And as glorious as the subs are in Knoxville, that's not reason enough for a coach to come there. So at some point you have to look at it and say, yeah, they have those steamed sub things. Yeah, no, it's all about the food.
All right, food's gotten better in Knoxville. It wasn't a particularly great food town 20 years ago.
No, well, neither was.
Much better now.
Neither was Nashville 20 years ago. You're right. But I come back and say there are some definitive positives here. We talked a little bit about Garantano obviously played better than we expected. That's one small, like, that's a sliver of light. But I think there's some real positives on this team for a new coaching staff.
No, I mean, 100%. And this is where you sort of have to – obviously, there's two different discussions here. Because the bottom line is when you talk about coaching hires, you never know what makes an individual make a decision. You never know why any one coach says one thing about any one job. One guy can look at a job and say, "Oh, I like the city. Oh, I like the academic stand." Like, you just never know. Like, everybody, you never know what makes a guy tick is the phrase that my boss Mitch Light always uses, and it makes sense when you deal with an individual coach and an individual job. But when you step back from Tennessee and you say generalities about the university, this is where that national championship DNA conversation comes in. Tennessee can pay anybody they want, any amount of money they want, if they want to. They've got elite-level facilities that are as good as anybody in college football. They can recruit at a better level now because the mid-state area and the state of Tennessee and Georgia are so much more fertile from a recruiting territory in the last 15 or 20 years than it was when Philip Fulmer took over in the 80s and 90s. So you can recruit at a high level. You've got huge budgets. You've got access to resources of any. You got one of the best stadiums in all of college football. You have a lot of things to sell to recruits. And Butch Jones has obviously done an amazing job selling all of that to recruits. He does a great job recruiting. So that's one part of this conversation. Can you win big at Tennessee? And the answer is 100% yes. So that's always and will always be the number one biggest selling point to luring a coach to Knoxville. The reason they had such a tough time hiring somebody last time is the other part of this equation, which is where is the roster itself? And the roster itself was in shambles when Butch Jones took over. Butch Jones deserves a lot of credit for rebuilding the program from a talent perspective. There's no question. They went years without drafting a single player in the NFL. They put a bunch of dudes into the league last year. So the talent is back. But specifically, an offensive mind. If you look at an offensive mind who can come in and look at this roster and say, where are my strengths going to be next year? Where can I make some improvements? And I've said this multiple times, you've got two underclassmen running backs that are really, really good. You've got your best two offensive linemen are Drew Richmond and Trey Smith. Really, really good, both underclassmen. You've got a couple of wide receivers that, while they have not played well lately, have a ton of talent in Callaway and Bird, and those guys could step into bigger roles as they develop. Also underclassmen. So if you're an offensive guy, I don't know, Chip Kelly, Jeff Brohm, some of these guys that are out there, I would look at that roster and say, I've got a lot of talent to work with in the next 2 to 3 years. Defensively, I'm not sure as much what they're working with on that side. But offensively, they've got a lot of pieces. And I'm selling that to other coaches. If I'm going out there and calling people right now and saying, hey, come to Knoxville to coach this team, look at what kind of weapons you're going to have in the next 2 years.
See, here's the thing. A loyal listener, good buddy, Cody, right? Cody's awesome. Cody's a Florida fan. And Cody, I saw, I think he put a Twitter poll out the other day asking, would you want Jeff Brohm as your new coach?
Just right around 10 o'clock Central Time Saturday night?
Yeah. And so that started me hunting Florida Twitter and seeing the number of people that were out there.
Not pretty Saturday
no,
night.
No. Very, very ugly after Florida loses. Well, many of them were using Jeff Brohm as the name, so I've got it all figured out. Jeff Brohm goes to Florida, and then good old Coach Yellowteeth comes to Knoxville and then exacts their revenge.
Yellow Teeth?
Yeah, good old Yellow Teeth.
Yellow Tooth?
exacts his revenge on Florida for the next decade. That's I've played it all out. That's how the soap opera goes.
Oh, man.
I mean, all he does is win.
Except for the last two weekends. Yeah, I can't sign off on that. As a radio host, I think that would be brilliant. That would be a ton of fun. But I don't think if you're asking me, is that a smart, savvy, good coaching move for Tennessee?
No. I just want the headline.
No. I do think Jim McElwain is better than the respect he's gotten from his fan base. I do think that.
I agree with that.
But I don't. Again, I think this is the same question we were asking about Kirby Smart last year. Maybe not as much this year. I'd like to see what Kirby Smart does with the next. Obviously, this is a really good Georgia team. When they lose 14, 16 starters next year and they have four guys coming back next year, I want to see what he does in a rebuilding year. That's going to be important to see with Kirby Smart. But, outside of Dan Mullen and Nick Saban, there's really not anything. There's nobody that says, I am a proven upside champion. Maybe Gus Malzahn in the SEC right now. So I can't get on board with saying, hey, Jim McElwain is the guy that takes you to the next level because he didn't do it at Florida. And Florida, this is the Will Muschamp conversation. Like, what I never understood about hiring Will Muschamp at South Carolina, despite having a 6-6 season last year and doing pretty well this year, what I never understood about the Will Muschamp hire at South Carolina is why do you expect a different outcome when you're basically asking him to coach at the exact same job as Florida, but less of everything? Like less history, less success, less facilities, less ability to recruit,
but less expectations.
Talent. That's the biggest thing. I mean, there's no question about that. But you literally are playing almost an identical schedule. Except for now you have to play Florida every year at South Carolina. Like, it was Florida, but less of everything. Why would you expect him to be different at South Carolina than you would at Florida? And he has been a little bit better. I think he's learned and evolved. So I don't, to that point, maybe that's a case for McElwain. McElwain, I think, is a pretty good offensive coach. He just needs to be put back in offensive coordinator role somewhere. I'm not ready to fire him or anything.
No, I think McElwain's being completely underappreciated in Florida. And at some point, you're going to have the way the landscape of college football runs at this point, you're going to have ups and downs, and some weeks, some seasons are going to be up or down. But the fact that a down season for him, the fact that the fan base has never bought in, I believe in the human emotion of that too. And I have very little to base this on. So this isn't like some I've talked to coach about it, but I do think that there's a sense from certain coaches that they're underappreciated, and I think that that's why it makes them anxious. I think Jim McElwain's going to look to leave Florida before Florida looks to leave Jim McElwain.
And Jim McElwain also not an easy guy to be around by all accounts.
No.
So when you have that Bo Pelini who got fired from Nebraska for basically just being a jerk and going 9 wins every year, now you've got the nicest guy in the world at Nebraska, Mike Riley, and he's winning the same amount of games and going to get fired for it. When you don't endear yourself to the people around you very quickly, that probably leads to some of that disconnect. And I think that's part of Jim McElwain's problem. But I agree that he's not underappreciated. But if you want to look at the roster and go, well, what's the future look like for Florida? You could say some of the same things. You got a redshirt freshman quarterback who's pretty talented. The Kadarius Toney looks like a really, really explosive player. You finally found a guy that's really good. There seem to be some pieces there that you could build around on offense. The offensive line looks like it's getting better-ish. The defense is in a rebuilding mode. They put a bunch of dudes into the NFL the last 2 years, and they are in rebuilding mode and will be good next year. I also think one of the biggest names, and I tried to tell people about this in the summer, Jeff Collins is not there, folks. He is at Temple, and he is a really good defensive coordinator, and they clearly miss him right now at Florida.
Well, Florida is going to have to figure out a way to sort of pull it together. But the Vols, to go back to the Vols and what that situation looks like, there are reasons for people to want to come to Knoxville and coach. And that's a big part of the difference between now and the search that brought Butch Jones. They're going to be searching at a much higher level because of Butch Jones. So it's almost like Butch should get an assist. Like, there's a point where what happens over the next couple of years, Butch should get like a slap on the butt and a thanks, man, because it's helped get them to the situation that they're in. Don't forget, you can join the Game Nashville to walk to the end of cancer. Visit at thegamenashville.com. Click on Light the Night or visit lightthenight.org/TN. Activities include a kid zone, cornhole, face painters, balloon artists, more live performances on stage by Bravetown, inspiring and uplifting lighting of the lantern ceremony, and a grand finale fireworks spectacular. To donate, text Cure Nashville. It's that easy. Cure Nashville to 91999. Cure Nashville to 91999. When we come back, Monday Night Football is back in Nashville for the first time in a long time. Is your quarterback back? We'll answer that question and tell you the keys for tonight's game. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Well played, Julian Council.
Where's Melissa Stark when you need her?
Well played.
Oh. Remember the side? Oh, she was like the first grade sideline reporter. Late 90s, Monday Night Football.
Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. When I was a kid, on Monday nights, I was such a football fan as a little kid, I would take forever to eat dinner just so I could watch as much of it as possible before bedtime.
So you slow play dinner?
Yeah, slow play.
Well done,
sir. We were never allowed to eat in front of a TV as a kid, but Monday night was the one night like that would be okay, and I would take forever to eat. Like my mom was convinced. Like
he did what?
I didn't get a lot of like sweets or anything as a kid, which is alarming because I eat like a 5-year old child now. But if I got ice cream, for the longest time, my mom was convinced that I liked my ice cream melted because that's how I ate it on Monday Night Football.
You think you know your kids?
It's like nope. Just trying to slow play that so that I can watch as much football as possible. Monday Night Football comes to Nashville tonight. Obviously significant. Multiple reports are saying now Marcus Mariota will play tonight. So we have it from a few different sources. Marcus Mariota will play tonight. And that obviously is what everybody wants to hear. It makes me nervous. I'm not going to lie. I'm a fan of the principle of don't put yourself in a situation where you're setting yourself back for the rest of the season. But if the coaches believe that he's ready to play and if he's ready to come in, then obviously you do it. I get nervous because I'll use yesterday's Raiders game as an example. There was a low snap that hit the ground, and Derek Carr was playing with whatever this broken thing is in his back. And it was like, I'm fine. The snap hits the ground, and you could see him struggle to bend over far enough to try and pick up the ball. And they pointed out on the broadcast, well, with the back injury, he doesn't have the flexibility, can't pick up the ball. And I'm looking at it thinking, then it's one hit. It's one hit, and I realize one hit's always the case. But when you've got an injured quarterback that is your future, I will take this moment again to remind everybody that I take my hat off to the Indianapolis Colts for how calm and collected they've been in approaching Andrew Luck. I can only hope that Mariota's playing because fact is he's just ready to play.
It's a hard one for me to handle right now. I got a little PTSD from yesterday,
right,
and I'm not trying to obviously make light of very serious situations for many people in their lives, but Aaron Rodgers going down on one hit. Is hard for me to now look at Mariota objectively. I'm kind of like, yeah, if you don't play at all the rest of the season, I'm fine because I'm going to Lambeau this weekend and I'm going to watch Brett Hundley play now, which is insane to me. So I'm still dealing with a lot of emotional fallout from yesterday's Packers game. So I the bottom line is I don't want to see a lot of movement from Mariota. It would be just. Unless, if you think he's fully healthy, then sure, put some zone reads in there and some bootlegs and some play action, rollouts. I mean, fine. If you want to move the pocket with him and you think he's fully healthy, then go for it. But it makes a lot of sense to have a very pro-style offensive attack, a lot of running the football, and a lot of quick passing games, three-step, five-step drops, get the ball out quickly, keep him out of harm's way. Because it's not like a hit's going to hurt him. What's going to hurt him is scrambling from the hit. That's where he could re-injure the leg. You're not going to get blindsided by someone and re-injure a hamstring. Like that's not how it works.
Well, look at how he injured it in the first place. I mean, he's running clear into the end zone and looks fantastic. And then you're like, oh God.
Whoa. Anybody who's ever pulled a hamstring knows exactly what it feels like when you start to push off, right? And all it takes is him standing in the pocket and pressure coming up the gut, and all of a sudden he tries to roll one direction and tries to be explosive off that leg, and boom, hamstring pops. So that's what you have to be worried about, is every time he takes off. And so the question is, how can you limit the number of times you're putting him in that situation? Because his natural instinct will be to take off, and that's what makes him a special player. So you have to limit that and cut that instinct out of him, which is really hard to do. And you do that by running the football 35 or 40 times tonight. And I think they can do it. I think that they will be successful at running the football if they go to it early and they stick with it. And then you ask Mariota to go quick 3-5-step drops, get the ball out quickly, tight ends, short passing game. Don't force him to run or move or even think about moving. Just get the ball out of his hands as quickly as possible. And I think that's good enough to beat the Colts. So I think that's the bottom line.
Flat out. This team, the Titans, are better than the Colts. I mean, flat out. Just top to bottom of the roster, the Titans are a better football team. Especially with the Colts already obviously announced and knowing that Jacoby Brissett is your starting quarterback. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to jump up and down for Jacoby Brissett yet. I don't care what anybody says. I look at this situation and say, if you're playing with your starting quarterback, and your starting quarterback is not even 100%, but you're playing with your starting quarterback, and then you take the difference between these two rosters top to bottom, there is no reason that the Titans lose this game. Like that, I fully expect the Titans to win this game, and frankly, to win it rather convincingly. I think it's going to be a Monday night party in town, which should make all of you very nervous because, again, I have yet to pick a single Titans game.
Just take the Colts.
I see what you did there. Yeah. Monday night party.
Yeah. No. What? Hmm? What's yeah. Monday night party?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't get the reference? Oh, never mind.
You mean to the former song?
Hmm? Yeah.
What? Monday night party?
To the old song. That's the line in the song, right?
Oh, Monday night party. Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, look at that. Yes, no, totally intentional. Very intentional.
Clearly.
And for a second there, I thought, wait, was that not in the song?
Do you guys not like football?
Am I working
with two guys who don't watch Monday Night Football?
Look, you got to understand, the number of times that I'll be singing karaoke and I'll be like, really? Those are the lyrics? Like, I don't even. The number of times used to play my own songs and in the middle of it just start making up lyrics because I don't know them.
There's a really good car commercial. I want to say Volkswagen, so hat tip to Volkswagen. I think and they had like a bunch of people driving the car singing along to like Elton John songs with whatever they thought the lyrics were.
That's spectacular.
Like Tiny Dancer, and they're all just like making up lyrics as they sing it, and it's all real people singing along, and everyone's like, those aren't the words. And like, nobody knows the words to Elton John or any song for that matter.
That is my bad. But I think that this is going to be a huge win for the Titans. I think this is an absolute blowout.
Well, there it goes. And I'm sorry. To tune in now.
And I'm sorry, Nashville.
Like,
I'm
going to win.
I'm genuinely sorry. I'm doing that streak thing on ESPN.
No, pick the Colts, please.
Every time I pick an NFL game, I am wrong now. Like, I pick college football and NFL, like, I was doing really well. I've now picked five things in a row incorrectly. I'm off to picking, like, Russian hockey things that I know nothing about just to try and get a little bit of juju because I got nothing.
Those games are fixed.
Well, I've got nothing.
I would take the Colts then, please.
No, perfect.
Just please, for the city.
Well, no, I can't be disingenuous. I can't pander. I can't be disingenuous.
No, it's not. It's you are the touch of death.
I don't believe in superstition.
It doesn't matter if you do. The rest of the city does. So you need to stop. Don't pick
That's
the
a
Titans.
Fair point. That's a fair point. I mean,
pick the Colts.
But can we agree, though, that this is, if not now, then when? Like, I'm not a big fan of curses or whatever, but when you start to look at it and say it's been 758 times since the Titans beat the Colts, if not now, then when? There's sort of an element, if not now this season, then when? If not now this game, then when? Because I certainly won't feel better about playing the Colts when Andrew Luck is back later in the year.
They've actually lost 1,300 consecutive games to the Colts. I think we need a fact check on that, but I'm pretty sure
I think
it's only 11, but that sounds
1100?
About right.
1,100? 1,100?
Numbers are not important. They're actually not real things anymore in this country. So
It
doesn't matter. It's just whatever I tell you is actually what it is. So it's about 1,300. I do think there's an element. We talked about this with Buck Rising, who covers, of course, the Titans for us. And there is an element of, you can see it in their faces when you talk to the players about this streak thing, that they know it's a thing. They pay attention to it. There's you always talk about the human element of sports. There's clearly a human element there. Like Julian always says, we all have iPhone, like we all have smartphones, right? They all know, like every one of those players knows the numbers. They know the streak. They know the years and how long it's been, and eight games out of 10 that were one score games that they've lost. I mean, they've lost in ways you're not supposed to lose football games. Like, they know all the history of this stuff. So it's whether or not they can put it aside. Either it comes as motivation and helps the team, or it comes as, like, this mental crutch where you can't get over it, and somehow they just have a hold over you. So that's the only two ways the streak can go. It either is going to fire them up and they're going to be, you know, great because of it, or it's a total mind control thing that the Colts just continue to have over this organization.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the fired up angle. Are you guys fired up for Monday Night Football specifically? 615-737-1025. We'll take your calls on that. 615-737-1025. Are you fired up for Monday Night Football? And do we expect something different, some elevated point from this team with this big opportunity on national TV? We'll answer that question next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 1025 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 1025 The Game, 615-737-1025. Pump for Monday Night Football? Johnny on Twitter came in and one of our favorites and said, yeah, along with an awesome dancing gift gif. Always pump when they're on prime time TV. John came in and told me I'm forbidden to pick the Titans to keep streaks intact. So
yeah, why not? Why just pick the other team from now on?
Well, you know,
it's not that hard. You can do it.
But it won't change my heart, right? You know, do the words matter more than my heart?
Yes.
Okay. Good call.
People listening on the radio can't hear
fair
your
point,
heart.
Fair point. But
just
I'll know.
Say Colts.
I'll know, and the football gods will know. All of them will
football
know.
Football gods do know everything.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, it's funny because I remember. The beginnings of this franchise and being downtown, and it shows you the difference in Nashville, which we're going to talk to Mayor Megan Berry in just a few minutes. Interested to get her thoughts on this in general, because they used to shut downtown down early when the Titans had a Monday night game because they couldn't handle the traffic getting out and in at the same time. So I worked for a few years down like at the 4th and Church area, and when I worked down there, they would actually come in and be like, all right, office is closing at 3:00 because we got to get everybody out of downtown before people start coming in to go to the stadium for the Titans game. And it's funny to think that the city just wasn't prepared for that. And now it's just another day. I mean, I don't think anybody's making specific different plans.
My wife is.
Oh, is she?
Oh, yeah. But we actually, like, she has to drive from, like, the Charlotte side, like Centennial Park area. We live in East Nashville, so she's got to make that drive every night, like right around 5:00. And so she's like, yeah, I think I'm going to leave the office a little early today, go like 4:00, just in case. I said, that should be about fine. You should be okay about that time.
Well, we're
But other than that, like, that's all that's really affecting life right now.
And I'll be down at the Omni for the pregame show from 5 to 7. And
she's actually stopping by.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
She's going to stop by.
Come over, have a drink. Yep. Have a drink. Yep. Have a drink. You know, but her, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
yes.
Now it's interesting because I was sitting there thinking, well, do I have to change? Because usually we're down there from 9 to 11, and that's 9:30 to 11:30, and that's,
it would make no sense for you to do a show from 9:30 to 11:30 this morning.
No, it would not. But from 5 to 7, I'm sitting thinking, do I have to adjust everything? I'm like, nah. I mean, I think we've gotten to the point where getting to downtown and getting situated.
You know what would help that? A transit system.
Well.
I don't care how we're going to pay for it.
Yeah, that's
we got to figure that out. But that's why we're going to talk to the mayor.
$74 billion in 372 years. I'm sure those are actual stats.
Yeah, her and all of her. We're just making things up today on the show. The Titans have lost 1,237 consecutive games to the Indianapolis Colts.
And if at each of those games every person in attendance had given $10, we still wouldn't have enough money for the transit system.
All I know is
we
need one. I smarter people than I will figure out how to pay for it. But that would certainly help getting to things like Predators games tomorrow night, Titans games tonight, stuff like that. It, the place was packed with the TSU game on Saturday. It was an awesome atmosphere, but traffic was absolutely awful Saturday night. So there's certainly some infrastructure that could be improved around the area, no question about it. And hey, maybe it's good for our environment as well. How about that?
Well, and we're at a spot now where you can have a Monday night football game and a sold out show at the Ryman all the same. Need to Breathe's playing the Ryman tonight, and there's no issue. Like, everybody, we can just pile on top of everybody on these things, and it's like, all right, we'll figure it out. So
I thought they were actually shutting down the Ryman after Jason Isbell destroyed the building for 6 consecutive evenings. Well, sorry, 6 out of 7 evenings.
He took a night off.
He took a night off on Thursday. Well, I don't know why they would have another concert at the Ryman. Like, that was peak Ryman, peak music. I'm not sure there's a reason to have other music acts at the Ryman ever again.
Well, I haven't totally ruled out just like kicking down the back door of the Ryman and walking in like I own the place during the Need to Breathe set. With fiddle, I mean, like,
actually,
hey guys,
seen
I'm
Need to
in.
I've actually seen Need to Breathe at the Ryman. Pretty solid.
Yeah, I've openly pandered with them because I know some of the guys in the band. I've openly pandered for the opportunity to sit in and play. But you know, they do things like a show that requires things like a show. So you can't just walk in all willy nilly and bust out a fiddle. So we're still
working.
You
could totally do that at the Titans game. And oh, by the way, congratulations to Kathy. This is totally non sequitur here. Speaking of your fiddle in random places.
Oh, yes.
Congratulations to Kathy, who purchased a lunch with the two of us, which I have no idea why you would do that. But thank you, Kathy. All the money went, of course, to our kids, and we're going to have you play a fiddle, and then we'll probably video it at some point.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
We'll have a camcorder. Do they still have those?
No.
Okay.
No.
We'll just video
tape it. We'll
use
phones.
Tape it, yeah. And we'll play it back for people.
Good Lord. I mean, it's interesting because this should be all the hype in the world, like Titans, Colts. Monday Night Football has to be puckered up the thought that they may get Matt Castle versus Jacoby Brissett, although reports continue that it looks like it's going to get Marcus Mariota. But at some point, I don't know. I just don't – even yesterday and over the weekend being out and about, I didn't feel like people were as juiced as I expected them to be for Monday Night Football. And I don't know if that's systematic of the lack of you know, fired up about the Titans right now, or if that's systematic of the lack of fired up about Monday Night Football. I haven't gotten this great sense that people are leaving work half days to go down there and start grilling and drinking and having this huge Monday night party. The number of people that I've had say something to the effect of, well, it is a school night and I have to work the next day. And I'm like, well, that's always the case with Monday Night Football. So I'm a little curious to see what the crowd looks
like. It's not like you get it every 3 weeks or whatever. This is a pretty rare thing. So if you're a big Titans fan, I would imagine all of those things taking place. I don't know why you wouldn't.
People
go down
just
there
complaining
and
to complain.
That's right. Fair. I mean, and listen, the bottom line is we drove past it last night about, oh man, it would have been about 11:45 last night. And they got all the tents up and everything. You know, they got the you know, all kinds of spots for tailgating to take place already set up. And it's going to be interesting to see what kind of fan support shows up, because this is a huge game with a team that's sort of teetering on the brink of being either really good or really bad. We're sort of not really sure, and it's an opportunity on a Monday night to sort of be a showcase moment for the city, and I don't – it's still sort of a – where is the fan base on this team? It's still – it's always been a question in this city, the relationship between the Titans and the fans. It's just a really strange – it goes up and down and back and forth. There's not really a definitive statement you can make about the passion and the commitment of this city towards that team, and – that's why they more than anybody have to win. Like that's why Mariota needs to be out there. That's why it's the Colts, and you got to beat the team that, you know, you had Peyton Manning, and a lot of people in this city switching to Colts jerseys because of Peyton Manning. So it's just a really interesting dynamic, the Colts Titans, and how it all works out in the city.
Well, and I can't figure out even nationally why, you know, Colts Titans just hasn't taken off as a bigger rivalry. I mean, it just feels like nationally
it's been extremely one sided.
That's probably part of it. I mean. And I will say, ever since, I mean, there was the period where it was Manning McNair, and I think it had way more. Obviously, in that time, there was some emphasis to, but even then, there was screaming and yelling of lack of total respect for what the rivalry means and what the two teams mean. So,
well, and it's in part, I guess, that, you know, the Titans rise during that, like, at right as Peyton gets drafted, you know, the Titans sort of rise to power, and it's the Ravens that are the team that ended up being the rivalry, to be honest. I mean, you get playoff games and, you know, the whole Ray Lewis thing and Eddie George, and, like, the whole thing was sort of built on the Ravens rivalry, and even the Jaguars to some extent in those early years where the Jags were really good under Tom Coughlin and Mark Brunell and McCardle and Smith and Taylor and all those guys, and that was just such a good team that, you know, they go 14-2 and go 0-2 against the Titans. I think was the number, 0-3 actually that year. So the Colts were never the chief rival, even when the Titans were really, really good. And in part, I think it's because there was this Peyton Manning love affair. Like, people were like, oh, I'm a huge Titans fan, but I kind of love Peyton Manning, so I'm going to let that go when we lose to the Colts.
Like, and I almost wonder if that sort of that sort of makes the flame burn a little less hot, because
I totally think it does.
Now you're sitting there and it's like, well, I'm kind of indifferent towards the Colts. Like, I want there to be this tremendous hatred for the Colts. Like, I want people to feel as fired up about the Colts as I do every time the Raiders play any of their division rival teams. Like, it's always a big deal to me, whether it's the Chargers, Chiefs, or Broncos. It's just a big game to me. And every time I'm like, that's the biggest one. Like, you know, Chargers, biggest rivalry. And then Thursday night I'll be like, doesn't get any bigger than the Chiefs. Like, that's just the way it goes.
Oh, I hate the Broncos. Yeah. I think that's slowly coming back, because you're now 4 years, 5 years removed from Peyton. Andrew Luck is really good if he's healthy and on the field, and has beaten you all of these times. Like, Andrew Luck is still just whipping the Titans up and down the field. And at some point, that's got to make you angry. And I'm sure it does for a lot of diehard Titans fans. So I think the group of people that love the Colts because of Peyton, but also were Titans fans originally, I think that's gone now. So there's really no, like, there should be more animosity now. Like, you got to let go of the Colts thing and the Peyton Manning thing. And, you know, I think that's something that needs to change, and I think it starts tonight, because I think people realize how big a game this is.
I also do have to agree that at some point your team has to be good enough to really have these big rivalries. That's part of right. What happens when you come out of the losing cycle. It's like you have to break your way out of the losing cycle to actually get the point where you can sort of have a heated rivalry with anybody, and that's part of the difficulty that the team faces. So I know we're up against it. Let's squeeze this one of our favorites, Joe in Spring Hill. We're up against a break, but Joe, what do you got, man?
All right, good morning. Guys, one of the reasons they weren't rivals is division realignment. 2002, prior to that, the Colts were in the East with the Pats and the Dolphins. Hey, rough morning for you guys, a Raiders fan and a Packers fan. Mm-hmm. But let's be realistic. The NFC is wide open. Atlanta showed us nothing. And do we trust Philadelphia to make it through the whole season? I mean, they are flying to the ball on defense. But and last thing real quick with the AFC, like I tell you guys going in every year, it's still Big Ben and Brady. You guys were probably right because I always put Flacco in the mix, and they're a real Jekyll and Hyde team. But with the NFL, who knows? Maybe Chicago's good. You know, we just don't know yet. It's too early to tell. The only thing I know is that it's going to be, you know, either Big Ben or Brady coming out of the AFC because you still can't trust Kansas City in January. I mean, Andy Reid, he's got a brilliant game plan throughout the regular season, but come on, they couldn't put up a touchdown in the divisional round of the playoffs. And last thing before I let you guys go, how about the Gamecocks fans holding up signs that are saying, keep Butch Jones? You got to love it. I mean, it's just a beautiful thing. Now South Carolina all of a sudden owns him as well. Big laugh out to the Vols fans. Sorry about your luck. I mean, guys, thanks so much for taking the call. Sorry about the loss of your QB, bro. That is horrific. But, you know, like we said, no one's pulling away in the NFC. So
can you stop talking about it, Joe?
Guys, have
Joe,
a great day.
Stop talking
thanks,
about
Joe.
It. All right?
Those were T-shirts, by the way, not signs. There's really the Gamecocks fans are saying, keep Butch.
I did love those.
I'd much rather talk about the Tennessee Vols and Butch Jones than Aaron Rodgers
and,
right now.
And, Joe, yes, Philadelphia absolutely having one of those legit seasons. I don't see how you cannot believe in them at this point, especially because the NFC is
Carson Wentz, dude.
So wide open. So
that dude's legit, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of legit, nobody's more legit than the mayor. Mayor Megan Berry going to join us up next on Braden and Fitz. We'll get her thoughts on all things Nashville, all things development of sports. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
If you are what you say you are,
you're listening to Braden and Fitz coming at you live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Link at Mount Juliet. And, you know, every once in a while, the show gets a lot smarter, and that's important. You know, we like to bring on people that actually know what they're talking about and can really break down what's happening and what's going to happen in this city, and there is no one better to do that with than the mayor, Megan Berry. We genuinely appreciate your time, Mayor. Thanks for coming on with us, as busy as we know you are.
Oh, hey, it's my pleasure, and thank you guys for inviting me. And welcoming me back. I appreciate you.
Well, we've got a lot of news we'll get to with you guys and what's going on with the city. But I do want to ask, just in general, a Monday night football game, obviously sports have a huge economic impact on local community and business. What can you give us a guesstimate as to what a Monday night football game means to a local community?
Well, first of all, it's a great way that Nashville just gets showcased across the nation because there's always those beautiful shots. And it's not as if anybody doesn't want to already come to Nashville, but boy, that just helps us attract some more people. And so just having that platform and that showcase on Monday Night Football is always good for us. And there is economic impact. Obviously, anytime we've got a football game, people come into town, they spend money, and that's always good too. But tonight, we want the Titans to win. That's the goal.
So, Mayor, is there impact in the advertising sense of it? I mean, is that more important than necessarily the people coming to it, is showing everybody the city on national TV for hours?
Yeah. I mean, that's the best impact for us. I mean, clearly there's a financial impact because you do get that spend, but we get that often anyway when we have a home game. So the real benefit here is just the beautiful way that Nashville gets showcased across the nation.
Mayor, you and I and us have talked a lot about sort of the future of Broadway, and I know there's a lot of work going on. How is it that fans can expect to continue to see, you know, Broadway and Bridgestone Arena and Nissan Stadium sort of all integrated together?
Well, I think that's a great question, and one of the things we're going to be talking about tomorrow is transit and transportation. We're making our big announcement, and we're going to talk about how folks are going to be able to get around downtown more easily, get through downtown easily. And I think that connectivity with transit is how we're going to link Bridgestone, the Titan Stadium, I mean, all of this together. And hopefully soon, that soccer stadium that's going to be out on Nolensville Road.
Talk a little bit about that, Mayor, and when with the Metro Council looking at the vote on the stadium, how do you feel about it at this point, and what excites you about bringing soccer to the city?
Well, I think that we have shown the MLS family that we are definitely a sports town, and you saw that with the great Preds run, and they really, really want, I think, to come to Nashville. I mean, we'll know more after the council considers the stadium deal, and I think we put a really good package in front of the council for consideration that is 90% funded by the investors of the team or what the revenue that's going to get generated off of that space. So I think it's a great deal for Nashville, and I think it'd be great to have soccer here.
We know that you guys obviously care, even with dissenting opinions, you guys care deeply about what the people are telling you of the community. So is there advice that you give people that, hey, if you want to get involved, whether you agree with it or not, how people can get involved in either voicing their opinions to either their council people, or can you tell people how, on any of these issues, how can people get involved in that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, part of the conversation with the Metro Council will be a public hearing, and I encourage folks who want to express their opinion to come before the Metro Council and do that. You can also always write email, phone call your council members and let them know what you're thinking. And we hear from folks too. You know, folks call the mayor's office. They send emails to the mayor's office, and we're always appreciative to hear what people are thinking. So we thank them for that.
What is the biggest complaint you are getting so far about the soccer stadium proposal?
Well, would it be, what if I said I was getting no complaints? I think that the one thing that I'm hearing is that the combination of that 10 acres that we're looking at to try to build up around the stadium and what that will look like and how that will fit in. I think that's the piece right now that people have the most questions about.
So, Mayor, when you look at a proposal like you're looking at with the fairgrounds, there's obviously usage out there right now in those buildings and a lot of things that are already happening. How do you weigh what's currently going on for the rest of the fairgrounds when you're looking at a proposal like this?
Well, I think that this is a right in line with putting more energy out into the fairgrounds and also building up a lot of the existing uses that are out there. This plan allows us to take $25 million and invest it in the buildings out there because we're going to have to remove several of those buildings and rebuild them, which is exciting, which means the fair will be better, Christmas Village will be better, racing will be better, the flea market will be better. I think that this is a way to activate that whole space and actually just make it better. So for me, I see this as an investment in the fairgrounds. And, you know, the voters have said they want to see activation out there. They want all of the existing pieces out there. And we want to make that happen. We also want to add soccer.
Do you guys feel like you can realistically do all of these renovations and still keep the cost where it needs to be for the vendors and for the people that attend those types of events?
Yeah, I think we can. I mean, one of the things that this plan allows us to do is to get that paid for with this plan. So, you know, I think we'll be able to continue to have the great activities out there. They'll still be cost effective and they'll be affordable. You know, people love the flea market and people love spending time out there. I know I do. And we want to make sure that that stays and affordable for everybody.
Obviously, we now have Nashville Traffic Twitter accounts, so transit a big thing that's coming tomorrow for you.
Yep.
We obviously, paying for this stuff, no matter what initiative we're working on in any city or any level of government, is incredibly difficult to work out. So let's just forget about paying for it for now, and we can address, let smarter people address that. Just philosophically, you tell people sort of the crux and the gist of why this proposal and transit in general is so critical to the long-term success of Nashville.
Well, you know, so many of us are sitting in traffic. In fact, I'm sitting in traffic right now on my way to the office. You know, it's one of those things where we know that we're going to continue to grow. We just talked about the fact that we're going to showcase Nashville on Monday Night Football, and people are going to see this great city. And already we have between 60 and 80 people a day moving here. We're going to have to get those people around our region. And in order for us to continue this economic growth that we've seen with low taxes, we need to make sure that we have the ability to get people around. And so there's going to be a mechanism to have dedicated revenue streams to pay for it. And that's going to be critical because I don't want to use the money that comes out of our property taxes that go into our general fund. That money has to stay there for our schools and our police and our fire. So having dedicated transit funding is going to be key, and that's what this referendum is going to propose.
You're absolutely going to start with Sumner County, right? I mean, I'm not biased or anything, but we're going to, if we could just start with Hendersonville specifically.
It's all about you, Fitzy.
I mean, I'm just, well, when you have the mayor and you have a chance, you make a request.
Right, you do. And here's the good news. The regional mayors, we all get together on a regular basis. In fact, we just had our mayor's caucus last week. Every mayor in this region wants transit. They really see Nashville leading, and we go first. And then when we pass our referendum, they can go to their voters and have a referendum. So all of these are going to be able to connect.
Well, I would, to your point, Fitzy, of selfish self-interest, I would absolutely ride a light rail from East Nashville into downtown to work. I would do that every single day.
Excellent.
So get it taken.
Yes.
You get that done, Mayor.
I am ready to get that done with your help. I need voters to turn out on May 1st after the Metro Council approves the language for the referendum, and we'll be ready to go and break ground.
You can obviously follow her on Twitter at Mayor Megan Berry. Mayor, we appreciate your time so much. Thank you for all your hard work and all you've done.
Hey, thank you all for inviting me on, and please invite me back. You guys have a great rest of your day and happy Monday.
Fantastic stuff from the mayor, and cool that you can get the mayor to come on and like we can have a conversation with her about the Titans and transit all in one. It's a special time. I will say to the question you asked, activate is a word we use a lot. In general, this is a great chance to activate. No matter how you feel on the stadium referendum, a Metro Council is going to – they're going to have this conversation tomorrow. So you can either sit on Twitter and yell about it, or you can get off your butt, go out there, and actually activate on it. And that's what I would encourage everybody, whether it's transit or whether it's stadium initiatives, I would encourage everybody to get out there and just sit in the room – and let your voice be heard. Don't be a Twitter yeller. Actually get out there and get to the people
that
listen.
It's our city. It's amazing how powerful people can be when you get out and actually do what you want to do. Like you said, and I asked her, I said, it doesn't matter what side of the spectrum you're on. If you're against it, go voice your opinion and email or text or call or whatever your councilman. Same thing if you're for it. That's the only way we're going to get anything done in a city or a country that desperately needs things to get done. You just got to go out and do it. Be active in your community. And I think that's a good message, whether you agree with it or not.
Well, speaking of whether you agree with it or not, when we come back, Preds fans, time to go unfiltered. We'll get some Chicago drama off the chest. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.